Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hi, this is Kurt Woodsmith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Leslie Mitchell-Clark with us, Toronto-based certified clinical hypnotherapist who specializes in a number of modalities, including working with individuals who feel that they might have had experiences with extraterrestrial beings. And most of this work has just been fantastic, as well as metaphysical therapy such as past life and inner life regression. All takes place at Leslie's Toronto Hypnosis Clinic at Lightwork Hypnosis. Leslie is also currently the director of LMC Media, offices in Toronto and in New York City, her hometown. Leslie, welcome to the program.
Oh, George, thank you so much for having me. I'm very honored and excited to be chatting with you.
I'm told by a little birdie that you and I met in Toronto at our live event at the Queen Elizabeth Theatre.
We absolutely did. Now, I didn't get to dance with you, I must say that, but we did have a nice little chat after the show. I was with my friend Sid Goldberg, and it was very, very nice to meet you in person. And it's been a while since you've been to Toronto. I think it's time to come again. I do.
Absolutely.
It's been too long.
And is that our buddy Sid from Gaia?
Yes, yes. That's our mutual buddy Sid from Gaia.
Yes. He's a good guy, hard worker.
Indeed.
Hard worker. How did you get involved in all of this?
Well, you know, George, I've always been fascinated with ufology since the earliest memories that I have. My dad had a telescope and we watched the skies. But I think that the thing that was most determinant of my work were my own personal experiences that happened when I was about 16 or 17 years old. And I was away working at a summer stock theater as an apprentice actor. And I had not only many, many sightings during, you know, one specific summer, but I had the occasion to know that one of my company members was a gal, and I believe that she's still living. I've tried to find her. She'd be a little bit older than myself, but she was a company member, and admitted rather to me that one of the reasons we were having all these sightings and all of this craft was obvious during the summer is because she had another job where she was a communicator who worked with the government. She normally lived in Las Vegas, and I guess every day or so, you know, she'd get on the plane wrap plane at the plane wrap airport, and they'd take her out to Dreamland or Dulce, one of the bases out there. And she worked in telepathic communication. She was very, very psychic, naturally psychic person. She was one of many, as I understand it. And she had decided that she no longer wanted to work in this area. It was exhausting. I can only imagine what that would be like, being so involved with the government in that way. So she tried to leave, and one of the things she was doing to escape was coming to work at a summer theater. Unfortunately, it was not an escape. She was constantly being contacted by craft and government people. And I even saw one day, and George, this is actually the truth. It is so unbelievable, but it's true. I was lounging at the snack bar, something I really excelled at. I was lounging at the snack bar, and I saw this late model. It was probably like a Chrysler Imperial, one of these really giant old black cars, the total classic idea of what you would imagine from the Men in Black. And the car pulled in to our theater and pulled up outside of where my friend's living quarters were. And out of this car came two, I'm going to call them beings, and I was only about 20, 25 feet away, so I got a very good look. And these beings had very unusual skin. It looked, without a better description, it looked very plastic-like or plasticky. Yeah. So there were these beings, and they were wearing retro 1940s-style suits and fedoras, the entire cliché that we have been told about so many times. Now, one of the unusual things about these visitors is that they were wearing their pants were very high up, the cuffs were way high up, and they were wearing what looked like orthopedic shoes, heavy, heavy shoes, that they seemed to barely be able to move. So I have often wondered if they were weighted in some way. Mm-hmm. But at any rate, they went into my friend's accommodations, and they were in there for about 15 minutes. I was about to just bust in. Well, there's your 16-year-old with no frontal lobe. You know, what was I going to do in there? But I was about to bust in, and they came out before I had a chance and just drove away. And she said that they had been there, you know, trying to manipulate her and convince her. But I guess this had to be something that she did with free will. She wasn't imprisoned, but that was my very profound experience of that summer that I was 16. And
you never, obviously, you never forgot it.
Never forgot. I never forgot. And George, the sightings of craft, every time we drove into town, every time I drove into the Custer with this particular gal, we were followed by what I would call very traditional sort of Betty and Barney Hill type craft that were very disc-like, not cigar-shaped, certainly not any of the Vs, the TR-3s, or any of that stuff. They were very much disc-like craft. And they got close enough at certain points where I could even see windows. So it was quite something.
Now, how did you lead into hypnotherapy?
Well, I have always been involved in mental health care. And when I was at university around this same time, I became a psychiatric aide, and I worked all night long at a state mental institution. And, you know, this was a while back. This was really just even before they had psychotropic drugs. I was, there were straitjackets and padded rooms, you know, the whole thing you would imagine. And so my interest in mental health care continued, and I eventually became what they call a psychiatric technician, which is like a psychiatric nurse. And I continued to work to support myself and my various efforts. I worked in various rehabilitation centers. So I've always been involved in mental health care. And I reached a point in my life where I felt that there had to be something more, that I had a, and this sounds very corny, but I felt as if I had a greater calling than what I was doing. And my husband, bless his heart, bought me a past life regression with a hypnotherapist.
You were the patient. Right?
I was the patient, and the experience was so illuminating. But it was illuminating in the sense that I felt this is something that I can do. This is something I was born to do. I can do this. I can help people. And it was really like a huge epiphany. And not long after that, I went back to school, and then I went to the Ontario Hypnosis Center, which was run by your friend, Dr. Georgina Cannon, mm-hmm. my mentor. And that was the beginning of the last 15 years of work, particularly in regression, and work particularly focused on individuals who have either believe they have had experiences or have had legitimate experiences.
When you first started hypnotherapy with these people, Leslie, what did you think personally?
Well, I kept an open mind.
Okay.
And at that point, certainly, George, as you can imagine, not everybody who approaches me for therapy is an experiencer.
Right.
So,
Some could have a mental illness, right?
Oh, indeed. And it's my responsibility to sort that out.
Exactly.
And, which I do before I see anyone. I have an extended phone consultation at the very least, for an hour at least. And by the time I'm done with that, I have a pretty good idea of whether or not that person is a legitimate experiencer.
Years ago, when I was 21 years old, I interviewed the psychiatrist of Barney and Betty Hill.
Oh, my goodness, really?
Dr. Benjamin Simon had his office in Boston, and I mentioned this just a few days ago. But I asked him a specific question, and I said, Dr. Simon, are they telling you the truth? And he said, I don't know what happened to them, but all I know is whatever they think happened to them, they're not lying about it.
Indeed.
And that was the important thing. And do you find that the same when you do hypnotherapy with somebody?
Absolutely. Absolutely, George. Now, you know, things have come a long way since the time of Dr. Simon. And remember, he was a specialist in, post-traumatic stress disorder.
Right.
Shell shock.
He was PTSD before there was PTSD.
Yes, he was. He was just P.
That's right.
But he was, so in his perspective, you know, he in his work with Betty and Barney, you know, he did some things that today would not be considered good therapeutic practice. And all apologies to Dr. Benjamin Simon. I think he was
he didn't know.
No, he didn't know. In fact, one of the interesting things, George, is when he worked with Betty and Barney, in order to, I suppose, keep their various remembrances or recalled memories from cross-polluting, he worked with them separately. He worked with them individually.
That's right.
And, you know, at the end of the session, what he would do, and this is the part that would not happen now, he actually, you know, told Betty and Barney to now re-suppress the memories. And you won't have any memory of what we talked about, you know, throughout the day. And so, you know, this is, you know, my thing is that I'm here to help these people get in touch with what happened, process their experiences, and if it's indicated, you know, accept their new status as a very special person.
Well, and by interviewing them and by putting them under hypnotherapy separately, he was trying to see if the stories gelled.
Exactly. He was trying to keep their stories from being polluted in any way.
From each other.
Sharing information. The aim was excellent, but unfortunately it's very unhealthy to uncover memories and then stuff them back in.
Leslie, as we roll into this, of course, and I want to talk about Intersections, the book you wrote with Wes Roberts, the experience itself overall is being done to these individuals. Have you concluded why it's happening to them?
Well, George, I think we have a number of things going on, and I also believe that we have many, many species that are engaging with us. And I think at this present time, much of what is happening, you know, at least from what I'm seeing, upwards of 90% are positive experiences that people are having. And now, you have interviewed many people who have been involved in some of the more negative aspects of the ET contact phenomena, which occurred right after Roswell. And I think that during that time period, and much of this has been written about brilliantly in Philip Corso's book, The Day After Roswell,
right,
where he talks about, you know, how the technology was, how the ET technology from that particular group of grays that were involved in the Roswell crash, they made a deal with, you know, Truman and various other, probably the Joint Chiefs of Staff, to exchange technology for as the ETs put it, a very, very tiny, tiny amount of the human population from which they needed to take genetic material. And I think that this agreement, at least according to Philip Corso and various other people, this agreement with Truman and this particular group of grays expired some years ago. So now, if I do hear about these traumatic events or frightening events where sperm or ova are taken from the individual, or in some cases, you know, women are implanted with embryos that are then removed, all of this stuff really hasn't happened for about 10 years or maybe longer. So those terrible experiences, I'm hearing about less and less.
Absolutely. It's just bizarre, though, isn't it?
Yes.
The implants and things like that. What would you say, no names mentioned, was the most bizarre case you've had when you put somebody under?
Well, I think that,
they're all strange.
It's hard to determine most, I suppose. I think one of the most interesting things that has I'm going to say, rather than bizarre, I'm going to say interesting, is, you know, in the book Intersections, I had the great advantage of working with one experiencer for many, many sessions, 40-plus sessions over a couple of years. And what would occur with that individual during sessions is he would tend to physicalize, and this is very hard to imagine, he would tend to physicalize one of the ETs that he communicated with on a very regular basis, who was tall and slender. And as I was watching him in, you know, under hypnosis and monitoring him and all of these things that I do, I would actually see his body expand and almost morph into this other being. And he would explain that was, you know, for my benefit. It was like an overlay that they were able to do that. So anything that involves, physical transformation, when things physicalize, that certainly takes me by surprise.
Of 10 people that claim that they may have been abducted, of 10 people, and let's say you've put them all under.
Yes.
How many would you say are actually delusional?
By the time individuals get to me, it's often what I would call like a last chance Texaco. You know, they've examined their health, they've been to traditional psychologists. That's most often the case by the time they come to me, they are exhausted, and part of it is, why would someone put themselves through this if this wasn't a bona fide experience?
Right.
So I would say that...
What do they gain?
Yes, what is there for them to gain when we see the ruined lives of, you know, what Travis Walton and what happened to Betty and Barney? What is the gain? Well, the reason they come to me is they fear for their own sanity, but also they just want to know. And George, we are, I think this is something that may baffle the ETs. I think we are far more curious than we have qualities that are the result of our, you know, combined DNA or however we evolved on this planet. And we are incredibly curious people. And it's my personal belief that no memory blocks can last forever, including the ones that have been created, you know, by the secret space program and been used on our friends like Corey Good and Randy Kramer. I think that eventually, because of our nature, no memory can be suppressed forever. And so, you know, the genuine experiencers, when they come to me, which I would say out of 10 has to be upwards of, you know, 80%. So eight out of two. So when they come to me, they usually present with missing time. In other words, chunks of amnesia or pieces of events, visions, you know, elements of strangeness, and they're trying to put these things together. And when they finally, when I get them under and we get back to where the events have begun, people finally begin, the experiencers begin to understand that they are not insane, that they have been experiencing something of...
They're relieved, aren't they?
But they're not insane.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
The following is a high-five moment from highfivecasino.com.
Welcome to Burger Yippee. Would you like a hot apple pie today?
Yes, yes, yeah, I won! Woohoo!
So that's a yes on the apple pie?
I just went big time playing High Five Casino on my phone. Real cash prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. Yeah.
So yes or no on the apple pie?
Woo! I won again!
I'll take that as a yes. Drive around.
Have you had your high-five moment today? Only at highfivecasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
Hi, this is Kurtwood Smith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.